Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
If you want to spice up any occasion, bring the sabor with Modelo Chelada. A mouthwatering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold fruit flavors, and a hint of spice. Bring the heat with Sandia Picante, a taste of the tropics with mango y chile, or the citrus burst of limón y sal. There's bold flavor in every can. Modelo Chelada. Bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, my writing partner, Mike Lynch, and super therapist, is going to be on the first half of the show. Talk about the book, talk about life and therapy and many important subjects. Dan Dunn's going to join us as well. First, I'll tell you about Tru Niagen. I've been taking Tru Niagen for a while. It's a cellular health vitamin. It's taken about 5 months now. I feel great. As we get older, our bodies experience a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects the health of our cells and body. Tru Niagen is a real scientific breakthrough, and I know the owner of the company, and we talked about the science of it. Dr. Drew's been taking it for a couple of years now. So lifestyle stressors like intense exercise, lack of sleep, stress on immune system, overeating, they deplete NAD because the cells expend more energy to function. It's backed by Nobel Prize-winning scientists, clinical research, and global regulatory approvals. This stuff is the real deal. Support cellular energy and defense. Visit Tru Niagen. That's TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code ADAM. Get $20 off any three-month plus offer, and it's good through July 31st.
We're inside the toolbox, cracking a smile on your radio dial. It isn't just a station, it's a destination. And I'll get you from A to B as I play the A's and tease the B's. But don't forget the journey. We got music from that band coming up. Traffic on the 10s, but this set begins with light rock and less talk. Right down the line and all around the clock. From town to town, from city to city. She's got no soul, but she sure is pretty. So crank it up and settle down. Open your heart and take a look around. There's lots of good to be found right here inside the toolbox.
You know I need your love. You got that hold over me. Long as I got your love, you know that I'll never leave. When I wanted you to share my life, I had no doubt in my mind. And it's been you, woman.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Dan Dunn. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Mike Lynch drops by to talk about Adam's latest book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. And now, best-selling author, depending on which newspaper you read, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on a choice, but again on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. We're going to bring Dan and the gang in a couple of few. First, we're going to speak to my co-author, Mike Lynch from, where are you, Lynch?
I'm in Westford, Massachusetts.
And thanks for joining us.
I'm sad I missed the Dan Dunn. Nobody sent me any liquor.
No. So we'll get to Dan. We'll get to all that. We'll have a little one-on-one at the top. And I was I'm always talking about this sort of ever-changing woke world. And by the way, nice job, Dawson, at the top. That was fantastic. Super smooth. Hit it out of the ballpark.
Thank you.
And I was, I think we're all sort of caught in between wanting to make the New York Times bestseller list, wanting to be accepted into Sundance, wanting to be invited to all the hot Hollywood parties, and then speak our mind and leave this earth with our dignity. So I know you very much wanted to make the New York Times bestseller list because why wouldn't you? That'd be four times,
of course.
Right?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I really wanted it for the frame. I wanted to be able to frame it. I don't have any of the previous book covers or New York Times bestseller lists framed, so I was kind of hoping to get them all in one. So, disappointed.
And we sold enough units to make it, but by good margin. I think there were some on there. I don't have the rundown of all the books, but
you should have it.
Oh, I should have it. Thank you. It's interesting the way they do it. And one of the things, oh yeah. So, right. We got, how to be an anti-racist, Countdown to 1945, Untamed, I'm Still Here, Splendid and the Vile, Becoming, a lot of stuff on race and what me and white supremacy and all that, the art of her deal, which is Melania Trump's, I guess, some about her. Anyway, it's all there. We're not there. Now, we sold more books than maybe five or six of the people that are on the list, but we're not on the list.
For the week that this captures, we sold 11,292, whereas Me and White Supremacy, for example, sold 10,994. So
right. So what's your head on this stuff? I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do feel like I get which way the wind is blowing out there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's, if you're going to call something a bestseller list, it should include the things that sold the best. Now, you know, I think America right now is clamoring for a conversation about two white guys complaining about their rankings on the New York Times bestseller list. I think that's what America's yearning for. That's the honest dialogue that needs to happen right now is between the two of us. But call it an editor's choice list then. Just don't call it a bestseller list.
Yeah. Now, we made the bestseller on Wall Street Journal and maybe...
We were 10 on Wall Street Journal.
And what's... I think Brian forwarded us a couple other lists we had made.
Yeah, that was... I believe that's the AP. I think that was a couple of different newspapers all pulling from the AP, and we were number 7 on that one.
And Publishers Weekly, we made it onto. See, those just tally up the number of books sold and then... make a list. Right. All right. So we're 7 on Publishers Weekly. Anyway, it's glad to know. I mean, I'm guessing 5 years ago or 7 years ago, we would have been on that list, a New York Times bestseller list. That's probably a safe statement.
I would imagine so.
But not anymore. All right. Well, now, so here's the deal, everybody. Mike's in business for himself, and I'm in business for myself for this very reason. I don't know in your business or in my business. I mean, your former business was working for the state, right?
Sort of. It was. I was working for a corporation, but it was mostly state-funded insurance people. So
I don't know. I don't know how comfortable you could be doing that or how comfortable I could be working for NBC or I don't know, CNN or something or ESPN. Like, I don't know the parent company anymore. It seems like folks who have an opinion and speak freely and sometimes tweet freely. I don't know if people last in that environment anymore. I mean, it's a weird, you know, it's an interesting conversation. Like, everyone does that thing where they go, every black family has a conversation with their kids about the cops. And I go, okay, granted. But I think every white family is going to have a discussion with their kids about what they're tweeting or what they're saying at work or don't show up talking about this or talking about that. Like, you're going to get canceled.
Yeah, I think the current moment has pushed everything to the margins. And there's not a lot of room for conversation or nuance. I don't know if you caught Bill Maher this week. I thought his ending rap was perfect as far as you're not helping right. And this idea of this is a difficult thing to talk about, you know, race in America today. And I think that people are scared to do it sometimes. Not you, though.
No, not me. And that's why you have to get I'm your emotional support animal. It is sadly, I looked on Amazon and it said ships July 18th. Can that be right? What is taking so goddamn long to replenish those books? That's what it said on Amazon last time I checked. At least it had a date. You can get the audiobook and you can get the Kindle, but the hardback on Amazon says July 18th.
Yeah, it says in stock on July 18th, 2020.
Okay. So, yeah, the publisher, we went to a second printing and we're sending another 10,000 or so to the Amazon warehouse. So apparently that's when it's getting there. So if you order it now, it'll turn right around, and maybe the week of July 18th, we could hit the New York Times bestseller list by selling 10,000 in one day if you go and order it now so that it sends to you when it gets delivered.
Well, we'll work on that, and thank you guys. And thanks for all the nice reviews, except for the three or four that talk about my potty mouth. Mike, I think, has a email that our publisher got, promised to read it to me. I haven't heard it yet.
Give me one second. I'm going to find it here. Where did it go?
It's kind of funny, but the only bad reviews I've seen on Amazon is about foul language, which means we're both getting old. But
Yeah. This was sent directly to the general mailbox at Post Hill Publisher. This is someone named Linda. I'll keep her last name out of it. But quote, I am writing you today to let you know how disappointed I am in your new Corolla book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. I bought it hoping for some humor in this now humorless society and to support Post Hill Press. I am truly disgusted by the filthy language in this book. Just a few pages into the book, the profanity started. There should be a disclaimer for those of us who are offended by this offensive language. I returned the book to Amazon and will get my money back. So somebody can buy another one if you want to get hers.
Yeah.
I will never buy another of your books as I find I can't trust them. I just don't know. I just don't know why when we are such an educated society, we are now resorting to the most vile of language.
But we're both jealous of this person, right? Who A, took the time to craft this letter, B, you know, licked a stamp and an envelope and like dropped it in snail mail. Yeah. And can never love again when it comes to like a book. Like if somebody wrote McCain's memoirs and it ended up on Post Hill, she wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
Because she can't trust.
I want to say to Linda from the bottom of my heart, I apologize and I feel like a piece of shit about it.
I find it when I hear these kind of complaints in life, I look at them almost like hearing about a pickpocket or something. It's like, it's quaint, like in a world where people are coming up and slugging Hasidic Jews in the back of the head when they're walking down the sidewalk. A pickpocket sounds quaint, you know, a letter saying, you know, good day, I'm going to return this book, you've disappointed me. It's quaint in today's day and age of toppling monuments and people punching each other in the streets, right?
Yeah, before she hit send, she fanned herself and said she was getting the vapors.
Did she even hit send, or did she physically go to the mailbox?
No, this was an email. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. So she's
probably typed by her grandchild.
She's under 80. All right. I want to talk to Mike. I'm always interested in Mike's take on the state of the world because Mike's very tuned in. Mike's a very good therapist, and Mike understands human beings very well. And I find myself talking to Mike and Dr. Drew about what's going on in the world. And I was talking to Drew today for a bit, and I stumbled upon a couple ideas I want to kind of bounce off you, which is I've always been worried about instant gratification. I've always been really worried about how much that scrambles young people, kids, and I've always kind of studied my kids, and I've, there's a couple little examples like I've always studied, and I've watched Natalia a few times, and I had a couple of moments where, I don't know, like any good detective, I like stopped in my tracks and went, this is happening. Why is this happening? Or what's going on? Like it meant something to me. It stuck with me. And the first was, you know, her sixth Christmas or fifth Christmas when her mom just bought her every single thing she wanted. She made a list. The Santa had 181 things on it. She got 182 things. And she was miserable, almost despondent. Like it was literally... It was Christmas morning in the living room of a huge house with a huge Christmas tree and Bing Crosby playing and, you know, the smell of figgy pudding coming from the kitchen. And I literally witnessed her despondent and miserable for that entire day. And it's because she got every single thing she asked for. And she had no relationship with any individual gift. She started getting a point where she was like tearing open one gift, looking at it like through the cellophane and sort of throwing it aside and going for the next package that had her name on it. And I just looked at it and I was like, and she was perturbed. You know, you can tell with kids, you can tell when adults are not in a good way, but they played a little closer to the vest. But they articulated a little better. She was walking around looking angry, you know, like when Beavis would turn into Cornholio or something and start vibrating, you know, like she was a Cornholio, like she was vibrating violently, right? And I just kept looking at her going, I don't get it. It's Christmas. You got everything you want, you know, and she was like, she couldn't express herself, but she was in a bad way. And I realized, oh, that's what happens when you give everyone everything at once. That's how it works. And I was talking to Drew today, and I said, you know, the devil makes work for idle hands. It's one of the truest words ever spoken. And I thought, a lot of idle hands, like a lot of and a lot of immediate gratification. Like for us, you know, I don't want to sound like old dude broken record, but going to McDonald's was a big deal. If we won the football game and Coach Gallagher was going to take us to McDonald's, it was like, that was a cause for celebration. Obviously, my daughter hits her phone. Somebody brings her McDonald's. It brings her nothing. There's no joy in it. There's no anything. It's just, I want McDonald's or I want Shake Shack. And it just shows up. And I realize the more of the instant gratification, the less the foreplay, the more the, you know, it's going to be Christmas in August. Mm-hmm. The more that, now we want it really badly as kids, like they want it, but it's a killer. And I think there's a lot of that going around because it's all instant gratification. I can watch any movie when it comes out on your phone or any food or any, you know, we used to spend long periods of time waiting for stuff to come around, things to show up. How big a deal was it for you growing up if something showed up in the mail for you?
The flashback I just had was, and this speaks to a little Tales from the Cheap as well, but putting a He-Man on layaway, right? And and waiting weeks to go back to, I think it was Zayers, to get that He-Man because it was on layaway.
Right.
You know, we did have to wait for things. This is why, you know, Willy Wonka, not only a very good movie, but it's a fable. You know, we have, I think we even say this in the book, it's just a bunch of grown-up Veruca Salts who want an Oompa Loompa now, right?
Right.
And it's that gratification, that get everything you want instantly, it does ruin people. I mean, if you want to get heavy about it, I think about the idea around, you know, purpose and meaningfulness as being one of the most important things in life, having a sense of purpose and meaning, being able to make sense of the world in your own way. And when we need to be able to put things in front of us. We need to feel like we're slowly achieving them. That gives us that meaning because the world is chaos. But if we can feel like we're controlling it in some way by having projects and having patience and having delayed gratification, that eases some of that, you know, feeling around meaninglessness.
Yeah. So I'm looking around at all the really pissed off 26-year-olds who don't have real problems, not as we would have formerly defined problems in the United States or any other country, more agitated and more angry. And I realize, I think it's a combination of delayed gratification and the lack thereof. And also, it's kind of funny because it's like, what do we want? Change. When do we want it? Now. There's no layaway for justice or change. It's all no He-Man-esque layaway. It's like, we want it now. We want everything now. We're angry now. It's got to happen now. And by the way, I don't know how you take, racial injustice and change it now. That feels like that's a couple of decades and a slow burn, you know?
Sure. I understand that as a negotiating position, but I don't think it's realistic.
Right. So I thought in the current climate, the delayed gratification and how that's out the window, the instant gratification with the phones and the food and just everything that's flying your way, and then the devil making work for idle hands, like people not really having enough on their plate. Like, people used to have to get up at 6 a.m. and, you know, take mass transit to get, you know, for an hour to get into town, to go into a factory, you know, like to be on your feet the whole day. It's like, all this like working from home, and I kind of did it done on my phone and all that kind of stuff. It sounds like progress, but those people got a little too much time. Like, when you have a job where, you know, you have a job where you have to speak to 6 patients in a day, or I have a job where I have to go to the airport, get on an airplane, go to Arizona, do 2 shows that night. Like, there's not a lot of time to like sit and sort of get angry at the world. It's a little bit of a hit the ground running. And obviously, if you work at a factory, or you manufacture, or you work on a street crew and you're doing asphalt work or whatever that is, like a roofer, like whatever, like those people always seemed a little bit more grounded or centered or happy to me because they don't have the idle hands. Like, they're not just kind of chilling. It's a lot. I feel like there's a lot more downtime for people now.
We're only like a century or so away from every day was about survival, right? I mean, we're not that far off from that time period where the majority of your energy was devoted to making sure you didn't die that day. And with that out of the way, I think that, you know, you have energy, it can go towards good things, you know, inventing or starting a business or something like that, or it can go to shitty things, or, like, you know, hate tweets.
Yeah, but or you can spend some of that energy inventing invisible threats to you that used to be real threats.
Right.
Think about the terms and the phraseology of people now, like, you know, I felt attacked and this is a hate crime and hate attack, you know, in danger. A lot of people not feeling safe when it's totally safe. You know, when did we start graphing on this? I don't feel safe at the Pottery Barn in Costa Mesa because of the
Trader
symbol
Joe's
on the side of the thing. Like, when did safety come factoring in places that had air conditioning and roofs?
How long, by the way, I just said Trader Joe's, it made me think, how long before that has to go away because he was a colonialist?
Oh, traitor.
Trader Joe's, yeah. You know?
Stacy has a question up here. It's going to remind us of something. 43, Florida, Stacy. She's going to ask about the Aunt Jemima and the Mrs. Butterworth or something.
But it's line 2. It's my bad. Line 2. I pasted that wrong.
That's in the book somewhere. So I don't have it in front of me, but maybe we can find it. Stacy, 43.
Hey, Adam. Hey, Mike.
Hi, guy.
Hey. So I got the audiobook. It was amazing. It was great. I loved it. And you called all of this stuff, like in the book already, you mentioned that they're going to take away Aunt Jemima. And I think you even said Uncle Ben's.
Yeah, I guess we'll find it. I should have told Max Pat to look for it beforehand. I screwed that up, but we'll find it. Dawson will find
it. It's in the hashtag heroes chapter around the, we're talking about the Redskins mascot, and the idea of taking away mascots really does nothing.
Yeah, it's nice to be a little ahead of the curve with stuff. I also was thinking we'll let Dawson find that. Hey, Stacy, thanks for listening to it.
So listen, what I'm wondering is, since you're ahead of the curve, I'm wondering about the silent majority. You know, like people talk about, like everything that you're talking about, you're speaking to people and like everybody's out here and we're working, you know, like we own an AC business. I'm on Twitter, but I have to have some fake handle so my business doesn't get destroyed. But, you know, like, you know, we're out here and what about the silent? Are we the silent majority anymore? Are we here? I don't even know anymore.
Well, there are more. Yes, there's a lot.
Adam has never been part of a silent anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of normal people out there, but just call it normal. And there's more than you would know. They're not really represented in Hollywood or television or the arts, or they're not really representative. So it's like it's kind of funny. I got something to write down for the next book, but you know, whenever you hear about a young black actress or a young Indian female comedian, she's like, I didn't grow up with people who looked like me on TV, and so I didn't know I could do this, or they were out there, or I could find my voice. A lot of that sort of, I didn't know there were, you know, you find the chubby chick and she goes, I didn't see any fat girls on TV, or I didn't see any lesbians or you know, Eastern Indians or whatever that thing is. And then there's this sort of thing we have all the time where it's like, you need examples of yourself to see on TV for some reason. But it's kind of that way with sane people now. Like even people, normal people, you know, God-fearing, family-oriented, you know, sort of patriotic people. Like, where are these people on TV? You turn on HBO, you don't fucking see one normal person on that station anymore. I don't mean normal as defined by your skin color. I mean normal as in what we would consider like a traditional American value.
Well, the pendulum is swinging because it was the other way for so long.
Right. Right. And so
the reason why I saw you guys were taking calls tonight is because I was just reading an article by that Taylor Swift has said that she was hurt by the census and that there were only two genders. And I hate to use, well, I don't hate to, but I'm stealing from you, Adam, saying, is this stupid or liar? I mean, like, at this point, like, What is this signaling?
I'll tell you what's going on. If you're running for president, then you have to campaign for 2 years and you have to say a whole bunch of shit that you think other people want to hear one side or the other and regurgitate it back to them. If you're Taylor Swift, the campaign never ends, right? So it's a constant. It's a decades-long campaign where you're sort of vying for popularity because it's such a fickle business, and it's here today and gone tomorrow, and there's so many examples of people that were huge sellers that aren't anymore and whatever. So it's like you're sort of, you know, Trump, Biden, you know, Nancy Pelosi, she's spitting shit out of her ass she never even thought about 10 minutes ago. She's saying it now. You know what I mean? She's 80 years old. She never thought about that stuff when she was 73. She disagreed with it. But either way, she's saying everything because it's a constant campaign. It's like a constant campaign. So I don't look at Taylor Swift any different than Biden or Trump. It's like it's a constant. They're constantly touring. They're on a train, a whistle stop tour, and they never stop. So that's why that person who never thought about that before thinks that way now, even though she doesn't think that way.
Well, I think it was Biden said he evolved on it, or it was Obama said he evolved on it. And it's like, did you, or did it just become politically expedient? And, you know, yeah, Taylor Swift's audience is, you know, my kid's age. Of course, you know, that's the way the wind is blowing, and that's who she has. That's what she's going to say.
I always look forward. Thank you, Patriot. I always look forward to, like, how much evolving am I going to do between 72 and 80 and a half? You know what I mean? I'm devolving now. Like, how much more evolving am I going to do? And by the way, there will be a chasm between you and all the woke people in Hollywood. You don't have to move. You just stay where you are and watch them all evolve away from you.
Yeah, the lines will change.
Josiah. Is it Josiah? Do we have that clip, Max Pata? Or we'll find it?
I've located it. I'm just cutting it right now.
I'll let you do that. Josiah?
Hey.
Hey. 38, New York City?
Yeah, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Good, good. I'm really wondering, like, especially with Mike there, like, the impact on kids. You know, I have I'm the oldest of five, and I don't have any kids, but I have a lot of nieces and nephews, at least seven.
Mm-hmm.
And they range from, you know, age 11 down to newborns. And what do you think is really going to happen with so much strange things happening? Yeah. These, you know, like, I didn't have to deal with that when I was 11.
Yeah, I get it. I was doing an interview on a radio show today, and they're like, what do you tell your kids about X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, I don't tell them shit. You get one shot at 14. You know what I mean? Let them enjoy it. When I was 12, my mom was telling me the ozone was depleted and we're going to be out of natural. We're in fossil fuels are going to be gone and we're going to be living underground. By the way, back then, I think there was going to be an ice age, you know, before we're right. Now the seas are going to rise. And there's plenty of time to get freaked out and bummed out. At this point, let them fucking be kids, or let them be young adults, or let them be. If they have questions, I'll answer them. But let them find for themselves. I hate this thing where it's like we have to sit down with our kids. We have to have a real serious conversation with them about race or about sexual abuse or elder abuse or genocide. And by the way, when does it stop? Do I just get into Rwanda and everywhere else? Do we go back to the killing fields? Where does it end? Do we just keep it to the Glendale Burbank area, or do I expand it in the entire United States? And then do we get into Canada and Mexico? Do I get into the cartels in China? Like, Where does it end? Sorry.
Well, I think kids are a lot more malleable and adaptable than we think, and I think that they'll adjust to this, you know, just fine as we did to whatever, you know, craziness was happening when we were younger. And you know,
I was bummed out. My childhood was impacted negatively by my mom explaining how bad the future was going to be, because it's like, hey, old bitch, you'll be dead, but I'll be 37 and miserable.
Well, that was going to be my point, is if you want to know what the future holds for your kid, if you're sitting them down to have these conversations, just tune into this show.
That's right. That's what the future holds. All right. Should we play the clip? We had the clip from the audiobook that I laid down in here, I don't know, 3 months ago with Dawson. We'll play it. Used to be the church folk who cared about this stuff. The uptight religious right folks who started petitions to have satanic costumes removed. The Tipper Gores of the world. Now it's the exact opposite. It's the people who are supposed to be the let your freak flag fly crowd who are suppressing everything. They need to take their own advice and moveon.org. It gets particularly stupid when it comes to mascots, team names, and logos. The Washington Redskin controversy finally died down after a Washington Post survey showed that 9 out of 10 Native Americans were not offended. 10 out of 10 douchebags on Twitter and the comments section of HuffPost were offended for them, so they didn't need to be offended. I don't think Redskins are big fans of the pigskin. Native Americans aren't huge football watchers. That didn't stop Cal State Long Beach from getting rid of their Prospector Pete mascot, which became a target of the Golden State Social Justice Warriors because the gold rush led to killing of indigenous people. And in 2015, Governor Jerry Brown signed a law banning public schools in the state from adopting the Redskins moniker for their teams. At the time it was passed, there were only 4 schools using the name, and they were given 2 years to get rid of it. Good job, Jerry. Way to work small to big. Can we please focus on traffic now? Let's worry less about the Redskins and more about the red lights. The real problem with the focus on these nonsense issues is satiation. It just stops you from actually doing anything that will have a genuine effect. As if stopping a school from using a mascot is actually going to accomplish anything for the community you do-gooders are trying to protect. It's like feeding hungry children a boot full of sawdust. They denounce they're full, and you denounce your work is done. As if we could just get rid of Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima, and the black community would have their ship turned around in no time. Think about the actual problems that plague the Native American community. Imagine explaining to their faces that you've been working really hard on the mascot problem. Hey, tutors who are heading to the reservation, turn around. Problem solved. Cancel the orders for the insulin and the substance abuse counselors. Prospector Pete is gone. Wow. Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben, run two punch. All right. I'm your emotional support animal. Go get that book and make Lynch happy and pre-order on Amazon or post-order it on Amazon, whatever we're calling it now. And maybe we will make that New York Times bestseller list. Put it on layaway. Like, He-Man, sorry. That's so homoerotic. By the way, if you'd like to get hold of Mike, who's a very skilled therapist, go to mc-ne.com. We're doing video therapy now anywhere within Massachusetts, right, Mike?
Yep.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Great job as per usual. And we'll talk very soon. And look, congratulations on making a lot of the lists throughout the land, just not the one that has New York Times at the beginning of it.
Yeah, no, I just subscribed to the Wall Street Journal.
Nice. All right, let me hit Simply Safe. Number one sign of a bad home security system is that it's complicated. And when it gets complicated, then you never use it. And that's why we all use and love Simply Safe. Two I's in there. Simple is faster, designed to be easy to use while protecting your whole home 24/7. Order online, open the box, put the sensors up, peel it, 3M batteries last up to 10 years, plug it in, plug the main in, put all the sensors everywhere else, done. No technician, no salesperson comes to disrupt your home, no outrageous monthly fees. Or years long contracts. I've always used Simply Safe. It's very discreet. It's very small. No drilling, no pulling wires, no ex-con in your house busting around your bedroom. It's Simply Safe. Named the best overall home security of 2020 by U.S. and World Report. What do we got? It's just 50 cents a day. What do we got, Dawson?
Head to simplysafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's simplysafe.com/Adam to make sure they know that our show sent you.
All right. Take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do some drinks with Dan Dunn and welcome the usuals right after this.
And now Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Metairie, Louisiana. A 24-year-old woman was arrested for disturbing the peace after pepper spraying patrons at Chuck E. Cheese. Definitely not a Jew.
Well, now, welcome to the show, Dan Dunn Podcast, What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. And also, you can shoot him a tweet at the Imbiber. Of course, Gina Grad and Bald Brian with us now. Everybody's going to get drunk, but I'm the designated driver for the show and for me, so I'm not going to be drinking, but I will be enjoying booze through you, through your palate. Yes.
So it says I narrowed it down to antibiotics or pregnant.
Oh. This demands an explanation. You bring your own booze on planes.
This sounds a little sketchy, I got to admit.
I don't have to land the plane though. I got up early. I have a bunch of stuff to do and I have to drive myself back to the house, and I just thought, you know, I'm going to make an argument for my alcoholism.
Hear it.
I do not know when to say when. Once the booze starts flowing, it would happily continue to flow, and I'd end up having to sleep in the back of the studio tonight.
This is 100% true. There often will be a dump bucket effect that Adam will finish for us.
Right. Well, so here's my problem. When we're tasting stuff and then putting it away, and Dan brings such a bevy of high-end, top-shelf booze, I can't throw it away. Now, if you don't believe me about things I can't throw away, Maxipata, if you go in the kitchen, I brought Maxipata a present because I went out last night with Matt DeAndrea to Morton's in Burbank, and I said, I want surf and turf. And they said, oh, we got a deal for lobster and steak. And I said, yeah, bring the lobster. And I said, I don't know how to deal with a full lobster, like a cooked lobster. And Matt goes, oh, you break the arms off and you crack the claws. And all. I'm from North Hollywood. We never went anywhere. I think we went to Sizzler once, which had like steak and langostino, but we weren't allowed to even have langostino.
Yeah,
we had, you want to show us, Max Babb? Are you showing them?
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
There's a lobster. It's funny, the wall behind it's exact same color as that. Now,
that is a full lobster.
Well, here's why it looks like a full lobster. We ate all the parts that you would eat of the lobster.
and then left him the tamale.
And then Matt said, it's done. It's a done. You throw it away. And I said,
I know
one human being and three seagulls who will eat.
And the human beings in quotation marks.
Yeah. Who, and I don't work with the seagulls anymore. But I was like, there's one human being who will eat the rest of the guts out of this lobster. And he said, who the fuck would eat that? I said, Chris Maxipata. And he's like, so what do you want to do? I said, we're going to pack up the lobster. We're going to take it. He eats the gooky guts that the round eyes don't eat. And I will not throw it away. If there's somebody who's going to eat that, I'm bringing it home. So anyway, I do that with lobster. I do it with booze.
And I really appreciate it. I actually consider that the best part of the lobster.
That's what I love about you. That's what I love.
Well, don't worry. We'll drink enough for you.
Right. So, Gina, you wanted to play a Bill Maher clip before you get two or three sheets to the wind.
Yeah, actually, it's long. I mean, it's Bill Maher's final like new rule, and it's about 4 minutes. And I don't know if you've heard it yet, but it is fucking priceless, amazing, perfect. I mean, I have little clips here and there for the news, but if you want to just hear it, I don't think there's a word of it that you won't enjoy and agree with.
Yeah, I watched the beginning part of the show the other night, but I haven't got to the end yet.
This is a sermon,
well,
is what it is.
Let's,
I'm a drink.
Let's do it. Yeah. Oh, Dan, do you want to get them started on their first pour, their first mix or whatever
perfect.
While we're playing this?
Sure. Yeah, let's jump in with our old pal, Simon Ford.
Oh.
Simon and Adam met years ago when I was doing one of my old shows, and Simon invented a drink called the Better Man.
Yeah.
And by the way, Adam, we've talked about this before, what exactly was in it. Simon sent me what he believes was the original recipe, which was 1.5 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 ounce of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, which is just water and sugar, and an egg white optional to sort of froth it up a little bit. You shake those ingredients over ice, and you put them over like a crushed ice situation, like a bramble. Okay. And then you take the mangria and put that all over the crushed ice, like you would a bramble or an old water ice type situation. And then you garnish with grapes and an orange slice.
I got to tell, we're at a, what barbecue joint were we at?
Baby Blues.
Yeah.
Martin's.
No, I was asking the Dan Dunn barbecue. Yeah. So that's really good barbecue place, right?
Yeah.
So we were there and, you know, Simon's a mixologist. And in my world, there's only bartenders and bar backs. I don't know what a mixologist was, but I was like, he said, I'll do something. I'll make a cocktail with mangria. And I was like, oh, knock yourself out, mixologist guy. And then he came back with this thing, the Better Man, and it was fucking exquisite. I remember just loving it, and it looked amazing as well. All right, so Simon's got his own gin out.
Simon went on to launch his own gin in 2012. and it became, it's a really, like, if you can see here, it's a really good looking bottle, very sturdy bottle there that they did. So he did this in 2000. So he partnered up with a guy named Charles Maxwell, is a very distinguished 10th generation master distiller. This thing's won just about every award you can win for its gin, including twice at the Ultimate Spirits Challenge, which is a big deal. It won Best New Spirit at Tales in the Cocktail down in New Orleans. So it's one of my favorite gins. And what I would like to say, guys, is maybe try it first, just straight up. Just take a little bit of it.
Most of these have been opened in my household, Dan. Most of these have been opened already in my household, and the Forged Gin is a big hit.
It's really great. I mean, what you're going to get here, the key botanicals in this thing are jasmine flower, grapefruit, and, of course, you get a lot of juniper being the main botanical in any gin. This is what's called a London dry gin, okay? Mm. Despite the name, it can be made anywhere. It can be made anywhere in the world. But Ford's is actually one of the few that's actually made in London. And where the term dry gin comes from is prior to the invention of a still called the coffee still. Okay. Prior to that, which was probably in the early 1800s, around 1830, gin was bad. Okay. It was nasty. And they would just put a lot of shit in there to try to mask the bad flavor, because they didn't have the proper still to really make it as pure as it could be. And then once, so they would try to cover up the unpleasant notes with all kinds of stuff. After the invention of the coffee still, this was a pure spirit that they could sell unsweetened, or as they referred to it then, dry. So that's where London dry gin, and your classic examples would be like Tanqueray, Beefeater. You got Fords now. You've got Sipsmith, which I think I brought in to an earlier episode. Oh, yeah. So now we're going to do, you get a little bit of this neat. What did you try it?
Oh, my God. I'm not a big gin person, and there's something so delicious about this. It doesn't have that car air freshener pine, overly piney quality. It's delicious.
I am a big gin person. This is very good.
Gin is like something to aspire to. Like, I feel like it's like, no one likes gin when they're 23, really. You know, I don't think I liked it when I was 33. There's a nuance in life. It's a nuance. It's a nuance in music. It's a nuance in art. It's a nuance in films. You know, like, there's nuance where, you know, like, you tell the difference, but, you know, you don't want all your sushi to be tempura and deep fried. Yeah. You know what
and
I mean?
Filled with cream cheese and mayonnaise.
Right. Like, you start, as you get older, you get this slightly, hopefully, you get this more evolved kind of nuance thing. And it's the same part that didn't like gin when you were in your 20s that almost appreciates it more now, because there's more going on. Sorry, go ahead.
Graduated to gin.
Right.
I probably turned the corner on gin when I was like 29, 30, you know, right around there.
Well, gin is classic. It's timeless. Once upon a time, it was the most popular clear spirit around. I mean, there's a reason Humphrey Bogart didn't say in Casablanca of all the flavored vodka joints in the world. You know, gin was cool, man. Gin, you know, and obviously it's with the reemergence of the craft cocktail movement, gin was such an integral part of so many classic cocktails, from the Negroni to what we're going to do right now is a gin and tonic. Obviously, I got my mixers here. We got our Q mixers. I've said this all the time, guys. You have the best spirit in the world, but if you have shitty mixers, you're going to have a shitty drink. Because about 70% of this drink is going to be the tonic, and then about 30% gin. And then I garnish it with a lime. I'm a lime fan.
I'm going to drink the shit out of this when I get home.
I love that we're bringing this in front of you. This is a new experience here, Adam. So you're going to see with the, and you know, I like this particular cue because it's very bubbly. And I think that's such an important aspect in a gin and tonic.
Indeed.
That effervescence to it. So try this, because Simon designed this gin to be made for cocktails. You know, not a lot of people drinking gin neat or on the rocks. Yeah.
God, has there ever been a better time and a simultaneously worse time to be alive? Like, I was just kind of thinking of, like, you know, we've all maybe turned into beer snobs as you've gotten older. And I remember when I was young, if someone's going on a beer run, like, I don't even know if I had a brand. It's like, I'm going to get beer. Okay.
Whatever $5 will get you.
Yeah. Get me.
Is it cheap? Is it cold?
Some of those beers. My grandfather used to get beers at it's now a John's. It was a Vons. It was like an Albertsons or something like that, or whatever, before. But he'd go there and just buy generic beer. It was literally generic. It was just beer.
Beer.
It literally tasted like beer. It tasted like if somebody spilled beer in a car and you parked it overnight and you opened the door the next day, it's like, oh man, somebody threw up beer in here or something. Like, that's what the beer was. There was no, the color, the notes, there was nothing. It was beer. Beer was beer. When we went camping, we just bought Lucky Lager or whatever, Stroh's. Or, you know, I didn't know what it had notes or hints of. I didn't know what the alcohol was on it or anything. It was just beer. Such a fucking better time to be alive.
I mean, think about it. You had Gordon's, you had, you know, there weren't a lot of options on the gin front. Now there are so many options, to the point where I'll say this. There might be too many, okay? Frankly, but I put Ford's certainly up there with the classics, with Beefeater, with Plymouth, with Tanqueray. I think they've done an amazing job with this gin, developed with bartenders. You know, Adam, from having met Simon, he knows everybody in the business. So yep. I think he consulted pretty much everyone in the business while they were making this gin. So price-wise, you want me to wait till the end?
Wait. Right, oh, no, give it out now. We won't need to guess.
I'm going to tell you one thing about what we're doing here tonight. Every single thing – I'm trying to focus on summer drinks here today, and summer's here. Every bottle that I brought on tonight is less than $30.
Wow.
No way.
Usually I'm busting out some of the really expensive stuff, but I figured, you know what? It's summertime. You're going to a party. You're in a – you know, you're going to somebody's house. You're going to have gin and tonic. You're going to the boat. You don't want to spend $100 on something to go do that. So Forge Gin is $28 a bottle.
Wow.
I'm done with the clown show.
It's a steal for that. Yeah, absolutely. So,
all right. What else?
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Let's play the Mar clip while you get your next libation queued up.
And finally, new rule, black people have to demand that white people stop culturally appropriating how mad they are about racism. It's great that Caucasians have finally joined the fight for racial justice in unprecedented numbers, but hating racism the most? You can't steal that. Elvis taking Little Richard's act, that was bad enough. Victor Sengby is an Oakland resident who put up small loops for footholds on trees in a local park for exercise and games. He says,
out of the dozens and hundreds and thousands of people that have walked by, no one, you know, has thought that it looked anywhere close to a noose.
But Oakland's mayor, Libby Schaff, wasn't going to let all that cheat her out of a chance to signal her virtue. She said these incidents will be investigated as a hate crime. Why is this white woman seeing racism where a black man isn't? The mayor also said intentions don't matter, but they do matter. And white people need to stop trying to cancel other white people whose heart is in the right place, but don't get it exactly right on the first try. A few weeks ago, when everyone was posting a black square on Instagram, BuzzFeed wrote, "Influencers, it's a privilege to post a black square and then go back to your usual content." As opposed to what? Abandoning your life and just posting a black square every day? People got called out for not posting the square, then for just posting it without speaking out, and then for posting it and speaking out, but not voicing their support in the exact way that was said in the new Dakota Ring. They were helping wrong. Ellen DeGeneres felt enough pressure so that she erased a tweet that said, "People of color in this country have faced injustice for far too long." Okay, that may not be exactly Black Lives Matter, but it's also very true and pretty close to what we're trying to get everyone to understand. Liberalism should be about lifting people up. And you don't do that by slapping down people who are trying to say, I'm on your side. No wonder white people right now are acting like a nervous waiter on their first day. So scared of making a mistake, they put a fork in your iced tea and a straw in your salad. We don't want to chant the wrong chant or hold the wrong sign. Hey, please, it's all we can do to clap on the right beat. You want to be a good ally, but not too good, or you're being a white savior. Use your voice, but don't make it about yourself. But speak up, unless it's your time to just listen. And then silence is violence. Even though sometimes silence just means someone works two jobs and has three kids. They have baby food on their shirt, not hate in their heart. Some guy just wrote into the New York Post, I am a senior level leader in an organization and feel compelled to speak up about racial injustice, but I'm afraid to. As a white man, I'm afraid that I will say something that will be misinterpreted and I will do more harm than good for my career, too. Staying silent seems wrong, but safer. Am I alone in this? Unfortunately, no. There was a sports announcer in Sacramento who tweeted all lives matter and immediately got fired, even though he apologized and said he just didn't understand. What he said came from a place of ignorance, not racism. That difference is important. Someone could have just explained to him why there's a deservedly special reason we single out black lives for protection. But now, instead of a possible ally, we create a bitter, unemployed person. Willow Smith, yes, Willow Smith, said, I'm seeing people shaming others for what they are choosing to say or shaming people for not saying anything at all. I feel like if we really want change, shaming doesn't lead to learning. She gets it. Surely people twice her age could make the effort. I worry that the kind of tension that the guardians of Gotcha are creating is going to make people afraid to mingle at all and thrust us back towards a resegregation of sorts, where instead of just seeing a person and not a color, now we're only seeing color. Maybe this is old school liberalism talking, but I don't think that's the way to go. Let's hang out. And if I fuck up, tell me why, not goodbye. It's a gradual, years-long process, like Trump descending a ramp. But things are better when the races get together, like when rappers sample Steely Dan.
Yeah, well, he's right.
I really like that.
Yeah, well, it's always funny when someone says all the shit you either say all the time or think all the time or say and think all the time, and you go, that guy's a genius. He knows exactly what he said. Yeah, it's all the same shit I've been saying for years.
That's why I thought you might relate.
I do
and
relate.
I love he called it Guardians of Gotcha, which I think it really, really crystallizes it.
All right, Dan, next booze offering, please.
Oh, your mute's on.
Dan muted himself.
There we go.
Back.
Sorry, I didn't want to talk over Bill Maher. How about some tequila?
How about it?
Yeah, this is fun drinking. I was kind of wishing you were involved here, Adam.
I will make up for it when I get home.
I also, Dan and I were talking. He wants to do a martini lesson with you, Adam. So,
we'll have to get him an Uber for that one.
Yeah, I'd like to do a martini thing because I don't feel like I'm good at it. I don't know enough. I can't even.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah,
and we'll do vodka and gin martinis. We'll try different vermouths. We'll mix it up. Right now, we got Espolòn right here. Espolòn tequila. The Espolòn is actually the name of the spur on a rooster. That's what it's named for. This brand has been around since 1995. The bottle, the artwork on this is you might recognize it. A guy named Jose Posada, his most famous work. He does a lot of the skulls that you see around Day of the Dead. That's what he's famous for. That's nice. On the bottle there. This tequila is made in the highlands of Jalisco, Mexico. Jalisco, of course, being where most of the tequila in the world is mandated, has to be made there. Okay, there's a couple of little pockets outside of the state of Jalisco in Mexico where they can make tequila, but almost all of it is made there. Their master tequila maker was a chemical engineer, and he actually designed these stainless steel autoclaves, pressure that cooks the agave the steam pressure that it produces even more caramelization in this tequila. So I think what you're going to see is a little bit of sweeter quality to this. So let's try it. Let's try it neat first, guys.
I got to say, tequila has come a long way from my childhood, where you sort of held your nose and shot it down and then, you know, dry heaved afterward. Like, the best you could do when I was young was Cuervo Gold. That was like, that's all we had. If it was gold, it was good. Hopefully it didn't come in a plastic bottle. But I mean, tequila was there to get you buzzed, but you had to sort of tolerate it. You couldn't really enjoy it.
Drinking tequila used to be a challenge.
Right.
Like, you know, you challenge another person to drink tequila.
Right.
Yeah. So this one actually spends a little bit of time in barrels, in American oak barrels that have what's called a number two char. You guys know about char?
No.
Well, they char the barrels when they make bourbon. Okay. There's four levels, and they kind of range. It's like 15 seconds to a minute. It's how much they burn the barrel. So the number two is about a 30-second burn. And what that does is it draws out a lot of that sweetness from the wood. And I think what this adds to this tequila, and you guys tell me but there's a vanilla flavor, a coffee flavor, and there's some spiciness to this thing as well.
Definitely vanilla.
One of
the smoothest tequilas ever tried.
I feel like a sex addict holding a boom mic while you guys are shooting a porn, and I'm just wearing jeans with a boner, holding this fucking mic over my head. Now I'm starting to tremble now, like the mic's starting to vibrate. It's not the weight, just watching it back and forth. That's right. Oh, another chick has entered the room. She's getting involved. Oh, she's going down on the chick. And I'm like, see, the thing's just trembling. My face is getting red.
Gina, did someone order a pizza?
So let's do this one. Let's do it with – let's put about 2 ounces of tequila in a glass with ice. We got the Q, the grapefruit, which we've had before.
Oh.
So we're doing sort of a makeshift Paloma here, which I know
you like. Oh, that's so good. The grapefruit is one of the all-time underrated flavors. Like, grapefruit's not great just to eat. You know, just like, I'm going to peel a grapefruit and eat a grapefruit. But the flavor of the grapefruit is fucking awesome.
Pamplemousse. Brian hates it. I was about to say,
Adam, get ready for totally inappropriate point shitting. I fucking hate grapefruit so much.
I love it.
I love the flavor, the smell of it.
I don't happen to have the grapefruit. Could I do like the ginger beer or the ginger ale? Or would that be not so good?
Nah, I just drink it.
No problem.
And the thing about the grapefruit, like I said, I like this one because it's not – I tried a grapefruit soda the other day that was sweet. And to me, that ruins the Paloma. I like this. This Q one's very crisp. Now, did you guys get – so I guess it would just be Brian at this point. Did you get the Ancho Reyes?
That's been a big hit in my house too.
Okay, so this is the Ancho Reyes right here.
That's like half gone.
Yeah, and it's made from a chili ancho in Mexico. It's a very spicy liqueur. Okay,
it's an ancho chili tequila, basically.
I mean, it's a liqueur. What I do is take a tiny little bit of that. Just I put it in here. See this little bit here? Just take a tiny bit of that and add that in.
All right.
To your Paloma there for a spicy Paloma, and man, that's a drink. That's a brunch right there for me.
That boom mic is shaking like a Geiger counter.
Oh man, it's so good. And I love the, and again, with this tequila, with the Espolón, it's already sort of a rich tequila. You can really get that roasted agave. There's some tropical fruit in there that I think plays really well off the zest of the grapefruit. And then again, the vanilla, and it's just a really great tequila for mixing and also drinking neat. And the price on this one, about $21.
Wow.
Nice.
Max Zapata. I want that recipe emailed to me, so when I get home, I'm drinking it.
I don't have anything mixed in here, and it's very drinkable. Just a couple of tiny ice cubes. It's delicious.
All right, Dan, let's pick one more booze or cocktail to get into, and then we'll play some Hollywood hand-me-downs where we can guess on these odds.
Jones.
I got two here. I'll go quick. I got a rum, Crujon, aged rum right here from St. Croix, 80 proof. Okay. It's distilled from fermented molasses. All right. So try this one. And you're going to find something interesting here, I think, from some of the other rums that I've brought onto the show. It's aged about 2 years, minimum of 2 years. It's a medium body rum. It's very clean.
I think Gina and me have both a bottle in the other room. I don't think that was on our list.
Hey, they'll get the booze. Max Pat, get Dr. Drew on the phone. Tell him I can't stop chewing my tongue.
Yeah,
and I don't know what to do. I'm chewing my tongue. I'm tapping my foot the whole time. My whole body hurts. I'm sweating profusely.
I've never seen you like this.
Yeah. Ask him if that's normal or there's something I can do.
I'll send him a text.
So let him know I've never felt better and I love him.
I'm going to do this one with cola. And you're going to get a spiciness to this rum, like a cracked white pepper spice, a little bit of licorice to it that I think is really good in a rum and, cola, I guess, not Coke. We'll do that one. And now this is going to probably surprise you guys. Want to take a guess on the price on this, Gina, Brian?
The Crusion?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful bottle. It tastes great. I mean, you said it's around 30. I'm going to have to go straight up with 30.
Yeah, Brian?
Brian, if he tasted it, he had to go get it from the other room.
He's just chugging it from the bottle right now.
I feel great.
Yeah, I mean, this is a cocktail rum, I think. You know, definitely more than just, there are higher end rums, I think, for sipping. This is a cocktail rum, but it really does work. And when I tell you what it costs, you're gonna see why I love this one. For if you're having a party, you're having people over, you need to get a couple of bottles of rum to get people going. It's $13 a bottle.
Wow.
Oh my God.
$13.
And, cheers.
And I want to tell you about this last one real quick, Ace, just because this is the most unusual spirit that I brought in today. It's called Haku Vodka. Okay. It's made, it's the only vodka in the world that's made 100% from Japanese white rice, and it's filtered through bamboo charcoal. Okay, so it's made by Suntory. I know we've had the whiskey before, mm-hmm. You know, the Suntory whiskey. This is a unique process. So, guys, if you want to just try this neat real quick.
Dan, can you see how much is left in my bottle that you sent me? That is about half a bottle. This is a very big hit in my house.
You love this one, huh?
Christy, well, my mom loved this one.
What's different about the vodka flavor? Send Drew a note. Tell him there's blood coming out of my ears right now. What is the difference between the vodka that's made from potatoes and then there's the Ciroc, which is made from grapes, I believe, and then there's the vodka that's made from rice. So what's the taste and filtered through the bamboo charcoal? Okay, what Brian, what's it taste like versus vodka that you would know like Stoli?
Dan can definitely clear this up, but I know that vodka is a neutral spirit, so once you dilute it, it has no actual flavor. I think the difference between high quality vodka and medium quality vodka and low quality is the smoothness. But Dan, please correct me where I'm wrong.
Well, I would beg to differ slightly. There are,
you're the expert.
Yeah, there are certainly elements of whatever the starch source was. Okay, when we talk about distillation in general, it starts with a starch. Is it a potato? Is it wheat? Is it, you know, is it grapes? As Adam pointed out with Ciroc, and you are certainly going to get some of the character of whatever the source material is in the vodka. But what you're not getting when you say it's a neutral spirit is it's not spending any time in wood. It's not being flavored as gin would be post distillation with botanicals. Uh-huh. There's nothing going into the vodka, but I certainly, for me, what I get with this one, and I attribute it to the rice, is there's a real roundness to this vodka, like a smooth flavor. You know, the mouthfeel on this is really unusual. I
almost all sweet. My tongue. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's the kind of thing that it works really well in a drink called a highball, which is just a Haku vodka soda and a lemon peel. That's the most popular drink. That is the single most popular drink in all of Japan, the Japanese highball. Okay. And they're really taking off here in the States. I'm trying this one today with this elderflower tonic. Do you guys have that?
Yeah, I do.
The elderflower. So this is going to add a little element to it that I think.
Hey Dan, is highball a generic term for a cocktail?
Yeah, a highball is the name of a drink, basically a drink with ice and soda.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But yeah, it could be.
It's also the name of a glass, style of glass.
Right, but it could be tall, different. Thin glass. It doesn't have to be vodka.
It does not. No.
Okay.
You can do it with scotch, whatever. I mean, this one, I think, and again, we've talked before on the show about having a story, right? When you go, if you show up at a party, you know, anybody can show up with a bottle of Smirnoff, which is great, or Stoli, but this one has a story. You're bringing something that I'm going to guess most people have never had before. You know, a vodka distilled from white rice. It's white rice and koji rice. That's what they use. They combine that for the mash for this.
So it's made exclusively in Japan.
Osaka. It's made in Osaka, Japan. It's the process. Is it unique to Suntory? Obviously, Suntory is the biggest spirit, a giant company in Japan, the biggest spirits company. They bought Jim Beam. It's actually Beam Suntory now, which is always interesting, right? You know, this iconic American brand is actually owned by a Japanese company. It's one of my favorites, really.
What's the price point?
$28.
So all under 30. All right. What I'm doing is I've lowered the boom mic down. The chick's in doggy position, and I'm trying to penetrate her with the boom mic while the director screams at me. So that's what's happened to me right now is the sex addict with the boner holding the boom mic. Dan, you're going to hang around with us. We're going to jump in, and we're going to do this celebrity auction thing. So sort of we've done these things before where it was sort of based on Kurt Cobain's guitar selling for $6 million plus, and then a sweater selling for like $334 or something from the MTV Unplugged from 1993. So we got Hollywood hand-me-downs, and these are tease a couple items, Max Zapata or Dawson.
We got Harrison Ford's whip from one of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Darth Vader's helmet.
So we're going to guess at these. These have recently sold at auction.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Take a quick break. We'll come back with the kids and Dan, and we'll guess these auction items right after this.
If you want to spice up any occasion, bring the sabor with Modelo Chelada. A mouthwatering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold fruit flavors, and a hint of spice. Bring the heat with sandia picante, a taste of the tropics with mango y chile, or the citrus burst of limón y sal. There's bold flavor in every can. Modelo Chelada, bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.